everyone. Welcome to Nerdy AF. My name is Kayla, and I'm accompanied by my wonderful co-host,
Finch.
And we're here with Chris, who was very kind enough to join us on the pod. And, you know, Chris has a really unique aspect that he's bringing to the pod where he has done a lot more of, like, the technology sides of, you know, getting into, what's the, like, the Iron Man suit, right? And we can see in his background, he's definitely mechanical. So, obviously, I'm just going to hit the topic that we're all really interested in is the heads up with the Iron Man helmet, right? So, you have been working on the software for that to make it so you can actually see through the helmet, and it looks like it has like actual recording capabilities as well, right?
Yeah, so I initially released this a year ago this past January, and that initial version did recording, did object detection, it's got stereo vision so that you've got, you know, depth perception and everything while you're wearing the helmet. And I wore that to Dragon Con last year for the first time.
How was the reaction to that? Did anyone know what was going on with the helmet? And did anyone try it out?
So that's what's funny about wearing something like that is most people don't know what you're wearing until you show it to them, which is, I guess it's kind of cool at the same time, right? But, you know, so right now I only have the helmet and the arc reactor. The arc reactor actually holds the computer that runs all the software, and so they usually just see it as like a prototype Iron Man, kind of an Iron Man 1 kind of starter kit, and then I'll take it off and show them what's in it, and it usually just absolutely blows people's minds. I've gotten just fantastic reception to it. I know Peter Atlanta Iron Man, who's been on here, him and I went to a convention a few months back. And same sort of deal. Peter's got the full suit and everything. Everyone gravitates towards Peter. And then Peter will be like, hey, you should see what he's got in his helmet. And I'll show him what I'm running. And it blows him away.
That is like, because, and I mean, absolutely, like, no disrespect to a single person out there, but we've had a lot of people on who've built Iron Man suits. You know, we've had Kira, we've had Frank. Obviously, yeah, I mean, Caleb, JT. But like what you're working on is like next tier. Like that's a whole nother thing. Like I've never done an Iron Man suit. I've done an Iron Man helmet, and anybody who's 3D printed an Iron Man helmet and put it on knows how like terrible your vision is in those things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And here you're just like, oh, that's okay. I'm just going to flip the table and invent something totally new.
Well, that was one of the ideas I had behind it was you know, I've built helmets too that were just the traditional helmets with the plexiglass displays over them, and then they've got the bumps, the little white bumps all over it to do the reflection. Then you put an LED on it, and you can't see anything out of an Iron Man helmet. There's less visibility in an Iron Man helmet than there is a Stormtrooper helmet, which anyone that's in the 501st knows that that's bad enough. But with the handler, you're okay in a Stormtrooper helmet most of the time. You just kind of lose your peripheral and everything. But it's hard to see too far in front of you. It's just so bright. You've got these LEDs pretty much shining directly in your eyes. And that's why it's so important for most cosplayers for their face mask to open up, because that's how they want to walk around. They don't want to walk around with their face mask down, because it's unwieldy to get around like that. And I can say at Dragon Con last year, I was able to walk around for, I guess, about an hour without removing my helmet. And then it was just out of utility that I took it off, not because I really had to. I think that's one of the most common questions I get is, do you get motion sick in it? Is it fatiguing to your eyes? Do your eyes get tired? And I've never had a problem at all. But I typically don't have problems with VR headsets or things like that either. So
I was going to say, that's probably the best comparison to it is having those screens like so close to your eyes, which, you know, with the whole development of the helmet with the software, like, I guess we could start software first and then helmet logistics. Like, what was that process like?
So I can say from beginning to the release video on the channel was about 3 years worth of development. And that just goes in phases. What I was trying to develop for that video was what you hear in the industry a lot is minimum viable product. And I was really trying to, I had a list of things that I wanted it to do before I released it. I know a lot of people, particularly in the YouTube community, have worked on projects like this. I mean, notably the Hacksmith, Jay Laser video has done it, different versions of them, and I didn't really want to tip my hand to what I was working on until I was much closer to being done. And so the development cycle really was just going down that checklist. What's the first thing that I have to get done to the hardest thing to do, which was kind of like the object detection. And so that was the life cycle. It was, let's get cameras working. And then now that with cameras working, we have to get them synchronized. We have to get the latency down. So there's all these phases of it works. Now let's get it working good enough to actually walk around in. And then, of course, figuring out how you're going to do an overlay on top of that, because it really is augmented reality inside of a VR headset. It's the closest thing I can compare it to is a Vision Pro, because it pretty much is a Vision Pro just without Apple software running on it, and they of course have a lot better hardware than I do.
Do you have a background in like software engineering that you kind of like drew on to do this, or were you just sort of like learning it as you went?
No, I would think that this would be a pretty tall order if I wouldn't have already had a background. I'm a software developer, an embedded software developer by trade. It's my day job. I've been doing it for about 20 years. So I built on all of that, but that was just the basis that got me started. The amount of learning I had to do, the software packages I hadn't worked with before, the hardware that I hadn't worked with before. I mean, it was all every step was more learning. So it was, I had the base knowledge to get going, but then there was a lot to be able to learn along the way, which is why it took so long, because this was obviously a side project to my side projects while I was still doing YouTube and stuff.
I can just wait for it. Like now that Apple has also released their own VR headset, there's just going to be like covers for it, and it's going to be like Iron Man or like Stormtrooper, Mandalorian. But I think this is really, really cool, and it's the closest we've seen, at least I've seen so far, that someone gets to like more of like a legit Iron Man suit.
Yeah, and so that's what's held me up from the suit development, and why I haven't gone for the whole suit is if I do the suit, I want the suit to integrate as much technology as I have in the helmet. But it's a bit of a chicken and egg I found. While I could, if I were to develop each piece as I go, it would take years. And so this year I have decided that I'm just going to go ahead and get it printed, get a suit built. And then work on adding the tech to it, because I'm kind of tired of not having the suit.
That's
And
fair.
so my initial thought was, if I take it slow enough, I'll do the arms and I'll do some legs and I'll do an arm cannon or whatever. And then, but that's just, it's drawn out too long. And so I'm tired of walking around with just the helmet and an arc reactor.
Now, are you looking to with everything you got going on with the heads-up display, is there like more aspects to a full-fledged Iron Man armor you're looking to integrate into that, or are you looking to just go what you got and then wear the rest of the Iron Man suit with it?
So there's two aspects that I'm still working on. Number one is the helmet itself. There's like always more I can add, and so I'm still developing the helmet. I'm this past 2 weeks I've gone crazy on it, and there's a lot of new tech that I've done in the past 2 weeks that I'm going to be releasing some videos on very soon. Most of them centered around adding AI to the helmet, and then for the suit itself, I've got some short-term goals, which is basically I've got like the repulsors, which the repulsors are part of the cosplay. They're wireless and they connect to the helmet wirelessly. So it's all over Wi-Fi. They all interconnect. When I turn them on, the helmet knows that they're connected. They monitor their battery and temperature and all of that, and that all shows up in the heads-up display as part of like the suit. And so each part of the suit can actually monitor itself, and then it's all integrated. So as I go, each part of that uses that same base software that are in the repulsors, but then I can add functionality. So for example, an arm cannon, if I want to add certain motions that do an arm cannon, the arm cannon will also be wireless. And kind of the idea behind that is still like what we started talking about, where I see problems with an Iron Man suit. When we were talking about you can't walk around in one with the face mask down, that was a problem, so I tried to solve it. One of the other problems I see is when people get armored up, it's wires everywhere. They hook up the wires here, and there's like 14 points of failure in the arm that can go wrong and cut off their repulsors to their hand. Or and so again, going wireless and taking a lot of, like stuff you see in the movies, like the what is it, Iron Man 3, where he's building everything's wireless, right? He can call it all to him. And while obviously I'm not there, the whole idea was that each component of the armor is self-aware. And so, as I go, it's kind of cool to think, well, okay, well, I'll do a calf or a thigh that has the flaps on it. And then that will be controlled within that piece. So it doesn't have to be done. So, some of the pieces we're talking about are the usual pieces that you see, flaps and stuff, but it would be cool to have a rocket and stuff inside the arm. Maybe not at conventions, but
Jetpack. That's the next thing. Like, it needs to actually fly. Once you get all that done, we're going to have you on and be like, how are you going to get it to fly? I'm curious. I really
I'm
want
working on it. I'm working on it. I've
to
already started some drone videos on the channel that are basically leading up to me figuring that out.
Fantastic. So I know I've seen some of those, obviously, those like, I don't know, what is it, like the jet packs with like, the arm, like air cannon things. Yeah, the first time I saw a video of one of those, that was the first thought I had, like, ooh, put that under an Iron Man suit. I mean, I'd fly into the ceiling at a con in like 3 seconds, but it'd still, that'd be an awesome 3 seconds.
Go
But
viral.
they did the one with Adam Savage, right? Adam Savage 3D printed a
Oh,
titanium
yeah.
suit, and then he brought out was it Richard Browning who did the jetpack suit, who and they did some stuff with him. The problem with wearing the suit with even Richard Browning's technology is weight. Like most of these people flying around in jetpacks have to lose a ton of weight. I think most of them are around 150 pounds or so to be able to fly these jet suits because they only have so much thrust.
I'm not getting one then. That's for sure. Wow.
I'd love to be able to do that, but there's always going to be that thrust to weight ratio that you're dealing with if you're wearing or anything resembling a real Iron Man suit.
Feel like it's women's time to shine.
Yeah, there's going to be a ton of Iron Hearts out there and rescue arms. Yeah, for
I don't know
sure.
if you saw, they just started their racing league, which they just had their first race in Dubai. And I think, I don't know how many, but I know I saw at least one woman racer on the league. So
I
I think that
approve.
was,
I feel like
I like that.
that's a safety hazard. I feel like I'd want to watch it for the wrong reasons.
They're all doing it
Wow.
over water.
Oh,
So,
okay. That makes a difference. I thought it'd be like up like a mountainside or something. I'm like, oh Lord, no.
No,
That's
they have,
terrible.
he's got pretty strict requirements that it has to be over waterways.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that makes me feel a lot better about
Yeah, crashing is not as bad.
it.
Yeah, then you've just got a couple of $1,000 of repairs if you hit the water, but at least no one's hurt.
Right,
Yeah,
yeah.
or the whole thing just combusts because you aren't hitting a mountainside.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want that with a pack of jet fuel on your back.
Wow.
Quick
Okay.
barbecue.
Yeah. I already feel bad for like the play-by-play announcers trying to like put some sugar on that news. Like, okay, number 13 slowly cooking.
Oof.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you go back, like obviously, you said you've been a software, engineer for 20 years. Prior to that, how far back is your 3D printing knowledge? Is that relatively recent, or are you one of the OGs?
So, I don't know if I'd call myself an OG. I was probably kind of like second generation 3D printing. I probably started around the time the 3D printing nerd started his channel. So, I wasn't in it as early as he was, but still early around that time period. I think I started 3D printing probably about 6 years ago. My eldest was in middle school and he was into tech and stuff, and so I bought a a Firestarter 3D printer kit, one of those old Anet A8 3D printers, and we built it together. It was me, him, and one of his friends came over, and we spent a week building a couple of 3D printer kits, and that's how I got started. And it's funny because my son never stuck with it, but I did. So,
You saw the potential.
It's funny because all three of my kids, they like it as a tool. I think all of them have used it at least a little bit as a tool with schoolwork or projects or something, or they see something that they'd like to print and they'll ask me, "Hey, can you help me out with this?" So they see the potential, but to them it's a tool, not a hobby.
That's
Which is
fair.
cool. I
It's
mean,
the same
nothing
thing in
wrong with
my
that.
house. I remember thinking that, like, if I had been a kid, and my dad had a 3D printer, of course, that would have been in the 80s. So,
It would have been a $20,000 3D printer.
right. I'd have thought that was the coolest thing in the world. And, like right here in the living room, I've got a little, tool cart with three 3D printers on it. And it's the same thing as your kids. Like, they're not in any way interested with like the way it functions or what it does. But every once in a while, I was like, "Hey, I'm working on something. Can you 3D print this for me?" And then walk away like it's McDonald's, And it's like, "Oh, okay, yeah, I guess I will." And then they're excited when it's done. But it's the same thing. It's a tool. It's not anything to, just to get something quick out of you want and talk dad into it kind of thing.
So, but they know it's around. They've obviously been exposed to it enough. So, they see it as another piece of technology that they could use in the future for projects. I think all three of my kids at one time or another have been into cosplay, and so they know it's there for cosplay projects and stuff like that. And like I said, I will go and design things for around the house sometimes if there's a part that needs replacing that I can 3D print cheaper than I can buy it. So they realize it's a tool that will be available for them. And I think it'll become more and more prevalent that people might have little 3D printers at home for plastic parts as we go forward. And they become easy to use, like the bamboos I hear are so easy for people.
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel like the first introduction I ever had into 3D printing was when I was working in college, and it was like for maintenance, and I did like appliance repair. And I remember just to replace like a little button on a washing machine, you had to do the whole panel, and it was $300. And I was thinking, like, why don't we just like print this out or have something where it could be small? We have like an industrial 3D printer, but I feel like now everyone can be able to replace their parts. I've had a lot of people ask me if I could like design parts, which I don't do designing. If anyone watched our last podcast, you would know that like I'm not capable. But I do think that it's going to be like it could be a household item, something simple. And I do think I've been seeing a lot of people come out now with a lot of innovation. And those people, I don't know if anyone remembers like in like elementary, like the Inventors Fair, right? Where you try to come up with like a good idea when you're like 8 or however old you are during that time. But I think it'll be great to help a lot of younger folks create in a different modality than what we're used to.
Yeah, and I fully expect us to get to that point where it's like, especially because, as you both well know, like coming up 3D printing, like not only did you have to learn how to 3D print, you had to learn how to be a mechanic on those things. You had to learn how to troubleshoot it, fix what's wrong, replace whatever you needed to replace on it. I feel like as, the technology advances in these things, they will eventually get to the point where they're just straight up plug and play. And you'll have these things connected like Wi-Fi to like your Amazon account. You're like, "Oh, I need this." And if it's something that I can 3D print, your printer will just start printing it, kick it out in an hour when, now it's something that'll take 18 hours to print. I just feel like as the technology advances, it's gonna be unreal. And then we'll all get to sound like the dinosaurs. "I remember when I used to have to replace the bed
I mean,
on those things." And
I mean, if you could, for example, if we get to the day that resin, for example, is non-toxic and is easier to print with, and you can literally just pull something out of a vat, that would be a great technology. The biggest problem with resin today is pretty much just the post-processing and the how toxic it is to work with. But if that became cleaner and easier to do and water-based or something, like once the material science gets there, I see that taking over FDM machines just because it's so much more capable. I know I just printed my daughter, she was working on a little art project, and I printed her it was an anatomically correct human heart that was I mean, a couple of like maybe 4 millimeters across with the resin machine, and that's obviously not something that's even if you got FDM to do it, it wouldn't be that great. So it's that's the sort of stuff I'm looking forward to is when that's more available to more people.
Yeah,
I
I
feel
agree.
like the end game is just the replicators in Star Trek.
Sure.
Like that's where we'll end up at eventually. And if we ever get that way with food, America's really in trouble because it'll just be
I'll
like,
stay employed, Finch.
yeah, you will.
Can you imagine just vats of proteins and things, and you buy like,
I don't want to see how the
I
sausage gets made. Like, however that is,
just.
we'll end up with that. Caleb will always have a job, and when probably about 6 months, we'll rename the podcast Pork and Beans, and it'll be
Yeah.
amazing.
Hey, we're getting there. I mean, even with all this artificial meat that there is, I mean, that's very similar in terms of like, the base technology in terms of, building up those proteins and things of not meat but meat. So
Nah, it's
it's an
weird.
interesting future.
Yes.
Yeah, and we all feel like we're like on the cutting edge of technology. We probably are, but I feel like, 20, 30 years from now, they'll look back at this time as like, oh, back then they didn't know about, or they didn't know how to, or they didn't have. And yeah, it'll
Yeah,
be a
they were
totally
printing
different.
plastic. Now we can print food.
Yeah, they were using it for costumes. Can you
I mean,
believe it?
I mean, switching over to something very similar to what we're talking about, AI. I mean, large language models, let's call them what they are, but large language models didn't exist just a few years ago, not in any usable format, but due to technological advancements and software advancements, now they're just a thing. Like everyone's got them. We can generate images, we can generate text, and it's almost taken for granted already. And we've only literally had this technology for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
I know. I feel like there's that too is a huge like creative tool for people that it just got so quickly mainstreamed into media. And also like the most of the time I see stuff related to AI is people using it for school to write their stuff. Which is, it's not the best, but like if it can help to promote ideas, that's one thing. But if you are, using it to write all your stuff, that's different. But I feel like I know there are like in media, like talking about writing scripts and music and whatever with AI. I feel like if it's really good, utilize it and put it out there. But I know there's, yeah, they want it to remain in human hands for that kind of stuff.
Nah, the
Finch is
heck with
like,
it
give
at
it
this
all.
point. Yeah, the way society's looking right now, we're not doing so hot either. If Microsoft can figure it out, good for them.
I use it as a tool. I've as a software developer, I've really learned to like, we're definitely not to the point where AI is going to replace humans doing a lot of things. Like, there's just when it does things, there's just so much wrong when it tries to do big things. It can do small things really well. If you ask it to write a short story, if you ask it to write a couple stanzas of a poem, if you ask it to write a function in C, in a programming like or Python or whatever your programming language is, it's really good at small things, and so I actually use it for things like that. With all of this work, like I'm starting to use it a lot. I mean, I will not be the at all shy to say that some of the code in the heads up display was written by AI. Because I know how to build software, so why don't I use a tool that can build components of the software, and then I can put them together or I can refine them. I see it kind of like manufacturing, right? At one point in time in history, everything was handmade, right? You had to carve it, you had to build it, you had to machine it. Otherwise, it didn't exist. And then we built machines to build machines and to refine things. And so now you don't hand build every piece of the car. There still may be some pieces that are put together, but machines build the parts and then you put them together or whatever. And I'm seeing that way with software as we go forward. Like, I still have to put together the car. I still have to design the car because it doesn't know what a car is and how all those pieces work together. But it's really nice when I don't have to machine the screw and I don't have to machine, each part of the door, that I can say, I need a door. You know what a door looks like. Hand me one. That kind of thing.
Wow. That's kind of a, I suppose that adds an aspect to it, you know, because you know, we've all seen the stuff, you know, like Terminator or iRobot, where it's like machines are gonna like take over in the future, especially like the iRobot thing. Like if you've seen that, where it's like, you know, everybody has this robot helper in their house, and one day they all take over. Yeah, what if you got like a closet, and that's like what will be the future of 3D printing, and anything you need comes out of there. And when you decide you want one of these robots, the robot walks out of that thing, and one day it decides it hates your guts and hits a button and prints five more of itself, like on the spot, and then you're really screwed, and then you're just like, well, okay.
You know,
Had a good run, folks.
but until we have the technology, like I was just saying, for a robot to build every component of a robot and then to assemble the robot, the factories and machinery and everything it needs to build something so complex, we're a long way away from that. Obviously, I'm not a futurist. I can't tell you how far away we are. But if I gave my AI, and it was real AI and it could think for itself, which we're not anywhere near, but if I gave it a 3D printer, all it could build was plastic parts, and it really wouldn't build anything that was very dangerous to me because it couldn't go get them and put them together or anything like that. If I gave it a laser cutter, what's it going to do? Start a fire? I mean, that's pretty much what we're at. I see there's this new guy, he popped up recently and has been putting together some great content, particularly on Instagram, where he's building this Jarvis pad. You may have seen it. He's got this pad that he's got a projector projecting onto. And I don't know. I have an idea of how he's doing most of it, but it's a very cool use of the technology. And he's got it where he can put something down on the pad and it will scan that thing, kind of develop a cutout for it. He can send it to his laser cutter and it'll cut it out of a piece of wood. You know, we're talking about stuff like that. We have technology to do that, but again, he recreated a paddle for a game. It's not a robot.
I think, yeah, that in those terms, it can be really, really helpful. And I think a lot of us are just overly unfamiliar with the capabilities that it could, you know, help with. So when you're thinking about like the traditional everyday person, in what ways do you feel like AI would be the most beneficial that we can use right now? And what do you think that will look like, you know, 5, 10 years from now?
So right now, my favorite way to use AI, and I'll tell you, I use ChatGPT most of the time. I'm working on standing up some local AIs here with my computers and stuff, but right now I'm using OpenAI, and it's just a fantastic collaborator. It can't lead a conversation, but it's very good at me bouncing things off of it when I have no one else to talk to about things. A lot of the stuff I'm working on, I don't have a collaborator for. I don't have a coworker for this. And so what I really like to do with it is just bounce ideas off of it. Like, is there a library that does this? Is there, tell me about this thing that I don't know very much about. Like, I want to learn about hinges because I'm building a mechanical thing and I'm not a mechanical engineer. And then it can go and explain that to me. I can ask it questions and it can reply. So it's just really good at me bouncing ideas off of it. And I've really come up with some neat ideas through conversations with AI, where again, I'm leading the conversation, but it can answer my questions way faster than I can Google the answers and read through the material. And so maybe in a way, there's less learning on my part because I'm not reading papers and I'm not reading engineering schematics and I'm not going through reams of technical books or anything like that, but I'm getting what I need to get to the next step. It's faster. It's a faster, so I guess more speed, less breadth possibly. And I think to your question, that's where I think it's going to be really nice when my Google assistant is replaced with an actual AI assistant. Is I'm so sick of me asking Google something and it just giving me a kind of a half answer, or really just it not knowing really what I wanted and go, here's some search results. I'm like, well, that's not what I wanted. Give me an answer. Look it up. Use your vast knowledge of the internet to explain this to me. I mean, it can do things like tell me how many teaspoons or in a tablespoon if I ask, but it's really bad if you ask it something complicated. And that's where these language models are much better at filling the need. And then to your longer question, what will it be in 5 years? It's instead of just language models, we're going to have machines and robots and stuff that learn how to do tasks by watching, which is what like Boston Dynamics is working on. It's the same. It's really the very similar technology. We develop large language models by having computers read lots of language, right? Reading just tomes of information and developing language models. And robots that learn will be very similar. Like if I show you how to do something 5 times, it will pick up on what it needs to do that thing and be able to copy you. But
That's
again,
cool.
we're still not, robots aren't thinking yet. They're copying. Even large language models are copying what they've read, right? They're creative about it in some ways, in terms of I've read enough to put together different answers, right? But that's where the machines are still going to be. Like, until we have that next leap, which is them being able to imagine. And even if that's in some sort of machine way, until they're imagining, until they're able to take leaps rather than just regurgitating what they've read, that's all they are. They're copying machines.
Wow, that's kind of like I always tend to think to myself. So Chris, I sort of feel like you're like, of a little bit older side, where it's like we remember the 80s and what the 80s thought the 2000s were going to look like. By now we're supposed to have flying cars, right? Like you think back to the future too, when we were supposed to all of our food was going to be like, what was it, frozen, and it would be like instant, like. Psh and we were going to have all this crazy technology. And in reality, our technology is crazier than we ever thought it would have been in the 80s. We just don't have flying cars yet because, I mean, we're still working on people flying over water. but technology-wise, we're like light years ahead of where we even remotely thought we would be. So I think it's fun to
Well,
think about,
at
but
least we
yeah.
have max headroom finally. I mean, we
Yeah.
could build that. So if
That one
anyone
could have
gets that
died in the 80s.
reference,
That would have been fine. But
AI
yeah.
assistants are finally real and we can make them talk to us all day long. And I mean, there's a bunch of companies doing, AI assistants to do all kinds of things. Even ChatGPT with their GPTs are building customized AI. So that's something I'm playing with as well, is building models that speak to you on different levels and are specialized and know what you're asking it. So, I've got two different AIs that I interact with typically. One model, which is a Friday model, which is, it acts more like a Friday or a Jarvis. It's got a little bit of wit and a little bit of sass, and it's a little bit more human. It's a little bit more fun to interact with. But then I also developed a model that is specifically for coding. And it is so good at giving me exactly what I want when I ask for something. And it's because I've tweaked it to know what I'm looking for. And it's what something that the regular model can't do because I haven't prepped it with all of the necessary prompts ahead of time. Like, this is what I want. Give me this. This is what kind of assistant you are, that kind of thing. And I think people will do more of that, is train their AI to be who they want it to be and to interact with them in a way that's comfortable for them.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go. I've been talking too
No,
much.
okay. I don't know you have it. I was just gonna say, I think that's really interesting because, we start off with wanting to use technology to connect with people. And then I feel like a lot of people still felt isolated. And I feel like we've now come back around again where we're using technology to connect again because people have gotten so disconnected that people don't even know how to communicate often in person anymore. Like, no one can, not a lot of people can hold conversations like we are doing right now. And I think that AI is going to be really helpful where the people who are feeling so isolated are, like you said, bouncing ideas, having someone who you can go to that comes to you in the right kind of tone, exactly what you're needing for. I feel like therapy wise, it can have some huge leaps and bounds, but hopefully can help to encourage people to, you know, continue working on their skills, teaching them new languages, helping to have the confidence. And maybe we'll get back to that same point where we're going to be going out and about meeting people and having more confidence. But I think that's just what I was thinking of when you're saying it. Like, it's exactly what I need. That yeah, I just got a whole lot of cool ideas when you said that you talk to AI to get ideas from them, and I'm just like, I need to start talking to ChatGPT more.
Well, and I think that in a way that exists. I have heard of like apps that people literally use as their personal therapist. That's 100% AI. And it isn't so much of a, hey, I'm depressed. Can you diagnose me with something in medication? But more of a somebody to help them talk through, decompress, you know, process whatever it is they're dealing with. They had a bad day or whatever, which I think could be really healthy. We've all had enough of the bottle it up
Yeah,
until you blow up in your 50s.
and they're a little scared, I think, of unleashing GPTs too much on people that are potentially at risk or in any situation where a GPT could produce an answer that you're afraid of. Like, you don't want it to go there. I mean, we've seen the headlines in the past few years where Microsoft had released a model and it had gone like, people have thought that it had become self-aware because of the answers it was giving, and you know, the guide rails weren't there yet, and it went off the rails and scared people. Even GPT, ChatGPT, a couple of times has produced weird answers, and people are like, "Dude, what's going on with GPT tonight?" And that's always very strange. You're just dealing with a language model that can end up in the woods, and you have no idea. And I think that's what they're most afraid of. And until we really get the, excuse me, until we really get these language models and understand how to set up real guardrails that really do keep people safe, I think that's really what's holding up further adoption into some of these other fields that they could potentially be big business in. You know, because I do see AI as a revolution in terms of the number of businesses and startups and new technologies that can use it, things that people are just now thinking of, big business, because of how fast it can expand, right? Because once you develop the AI therapist that you really feel comfortable with its answers, that you really don't think it's going to go off in the rails, where you're really not going to feel like you're going to get sued by it telling someone something you really shouldn't have told someone that was
Walk
in that
off a
situation.
bridge.
Exactly. That's when you're going to have someone that starts up AI therapy and doesn't have to hire therapists anymore, because we've got a therapist that can talk to everybody. And you hope you don't get in a place where human therapists aren't needed anymore, because that seems like a dark place. But anyway, I think there's a lot of uses for these that people haven't tapped into yet.
And it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. It's kind of like, you know, just like we were talking about with the 3D printers and sort of like where they started versus what they could potentially end up doing. And like AI, I think, is the most fascinating thing. You know, like we think to ourselves, like, oh, you know, AI. And you know, when it comes to being a futurist, people love to go doom and gloom like this, because that was even a fear back in the 80s that eventually the machines were going to take over. And I'm like, okay. but, you know, it's kind of like, okay. Like, wouldn't it be better, you know, especially in some of these systems, especially my brain's just going in there, especially with a lot of like government, whether it's local government or big government systems that get so bogged down in bureaucracy and paperwork. If you can have an AI literally just streamlined, like, I don't know, the street department, so that, you know, you aren't having work orders missed everywhere and it can, you know, run things in a more efficient manner. I'd be all about that.
It's one of the things that I think is going to drive technology, and it's why NVIDIA is going to continue to be such a big company in this space, is because they're, until we get some more companies developing microprocessors that are more general purpose and people can write all these AI engines for them, the computing horsepower required for widespread rollout of these is just massive. Like, these AI engines take a lot of memory. They take a lot of horsepower to run, and that's just for me to talk to it. I mean, I can't even imagine, because I haven't looked into it before, but I can't even imagine what horsepower that OpenAI is running for the number of hosts that they, serve each day. I know why they limit, like if you use it too much, they will limit you, even if you're a paying customer, just because it's just massive amounts of horsepower to run these things.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Well, believe it or not, we are like already to the point where we're up against the clock. Like we shot through that thing. I looked at the clock and I'm like, is that? Yeah, that's right. Okay. All right. So, Chris Kersey Fabs, where can everybody find you at?
Oh boy. So Kersey Fabrications is pretty much on all social media. Some of them I use more than others. I post all my full length videos on YouTube. I post most of my status updates and what I'm working on today on Instagram, so I would check those two out first. I'm starting a new YouTube channel called Project Oasis, or The Oasis Project. I keep getting that one backwards. The Oasis Project, which is going to be releasing all of my source code for everything that I'm working on. So I'm going full open source with all of my project. What's been really holding me up there has been documentation, because I want to release it with some documentation. A lot of cleanups, because most of the stuff I've written has been quick and dirty to get it up and running and get it just usable. And so I've been doing a lot of cleanups and documenting and stuff. So the Oasis project is coming. I've got a YouTube channel started for that one. You can find it at, I think, at Oasis-Project or something like that. You can find it on YouTube. And there's going to be a website that has all of the documentation. So I think that's it. And I do a lot of cons, particularly in the Southeast. So you can find me at DragonCon every year, and some other ones in the area. MomoCon. I'll be at MomoCon this year.
All right. Well, cool. Well, hey, Chris, thank you so much for coming on. We're both definitely excited to like see like what you got coming out here as the months and years go past. And eventually, if you're full board, we'll be like, we could see that. Like we could have seen that coming.
It
That's
was all
okay.
there. It was all there.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for tuning in, everybody. Once again, Chris, thank you for coming on, and we will talk to you next time.
Hi, everyone.
Bye.